You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Whole Foods Market. Whole Foods Market is proud to support the independent farms and small businesses in our community. Whole Foods features fresh local produce from the tri-state area. This week, from New York State, yellow and sugar plums, red onions, and sour cherries. For more information on local produce, go to wholefoodsmarket.com. Welcome to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Erica Weitz, and I'm a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in Manhattan, which qualifies me to sit here and talk to you about food for half an hour, I suppose. Yeah, I've been teaching for a very long time, 12 and a half years now. Wow. And, you know, we teach our curriculum at ICE, and every year the curriculum goes around and comes around because curriculum knows no season. It is impossible to change our curriculum based on the season, so we teach the same lessons year-round during dark, damp, cold January and steamy, hot July. Because we teach so many groups of students all year long, there's no way to seasonalize. Is that a word? Seasonalize our curriculum as much as we would love to and have talked about doing it. We just can't. So we make salad niçoise in December and bœuf bourguignon in August. It's just how it is. It's just how it has to be, unfortunately. And last week here in New York, we had one of our worst heat waves in decades. It hit 103 degrees last week. And I found myself smack in the middle of teaching our second mod, Mod 2, which is our techniques intensive mod. We go through all the techniques, saute and grill and roast and stew and braise and all of those. And right in the middle of that heat wave, we were doing our wet heat week, which sounds a little risque, but really just means that we were stewing and braising and steaming. And it was 103 degrees in New York. And did I also mention that the air conditioning in my kitchen was kind of on the blink? So we stewed and braised in our own sweat, slowly rendering out our own fat and connective tissue, creating tasty little sauces that pooled at the small of your back. It was kind of like cooking in a real kitchen in a restaurant. That's what I kept telling my students. That's how I sold it to them. Now, since we were stewing, you would think that most of that stuff that we were cooking was cold weather food. And most of it is. Obviously, stews are meant for cold weather. I mean, who would really want to eat braised lamb shanks or coq au vin when it's 100 degrees outside? You know, stewing is for winter. Except that there are these couple of dishes that we make during that week that are right there in the wet heat immersion unit, right there in the middle of stewing and braising, but they are stews and braises from sunnier, warmer places, places where it's summer year-round. And we include a couple of those stews, and they are truly great. And those are dishes like the classic French Provençal recipe, ratatouille, which is just a stew of eggplant and zucchini and peppers and onions and tomatoes, which are all summer vegetables, or caponata, which is the player from the Sicilian team, which is also made from eggplant and tomatoes and onions, and then some olives and capers and sugar and vinegar. And then we also make a Turkish eggplant stew, which is cooked with eggplant and lentils and tomatoes and chili peppers and onions and garlic and tomatoes. They all sound kind of similar, aren't they? Well, that's because they're all cousins. They're all little spin-off versions of basically the same summer stew based on that same bulky staple vegetable of summer, the eggplant. They're three Mediterranean slow-cooked wonders. They're sweet and they're acidic and they're full of vegetables and they are truly the oxymoronic, hypocritical, odd man out, the stews of summer. So what makes all of these magical, is the approach, the way that you approach these stews. You have to cook them very slowly. It's summer. You can't move too quickly. You have to cook slowly. All stews, of course, you have to cook slowly. It takes a long time to break down that tough connective tissue in those tough meats that we like to stew. Vegetables don't really have connective tissue, but they require a different sort of long, slow cooking. The whole point of cooking these vegetables slowly is that you have to cook all the water out of them because vegetables are mostly water. But then when the water's gone, you have to allow time for the sugars in them to caramelize. Now, I've talked about this many times on this show before, how important it is to let the sugars in the vegetables caramelize. But when I was making these three different stews this week, I was drawn to the really intense kind of connection between the three of them and the three different techniques and how they're really just like, they're almost siblings. They're cousins, not siblings. Common DNA, but not quite the same. So you just have to approach these vegetables really slowly. You put them in the pot, you cook out the water, you let the sugars caramelize, and then you add tomatoes. And that's what, to me, makes these really classic summer stews, is that you're adding tomatoes to them, and then you let the water in those tomatoes cook out. And then the sugar in the tomatoes caramelizes. And that is slow food indeed, because that takes a long time. If you just rush it and boil these vegetables, you'll just get a big, mushy, wet pot of soft vegetable goop with no flavor. You have to take their time. There's no way around it. You have to act slowly. Now, why would people want to stew their summer produce? Why is it so odd? Why are these dishes summer stews? Who wants to use the oven or the stove for minimum 2 hours on a hot July day? Well, I think that maybe these stews come from a time when people had communal ovens in their town, and they would bring the dishes to the communal oven and just drop it off and leave it there. And maybe the poor suffering baker would do it. Or maybe just people had to cook anyway all year round. And even though it was summer, you still had to feed the family. And they just cooked what was available. And also, maybe because back when these dishes were created, people weren't as whiny and temperamental as us modern day whiny urbanites. I don't know. So last year, around this time, oh, by the way, this is episode 50 of Why We Cook. This is the 50th episode. So congratulations to all you listeners out there for sticking with it all this time. I appreciate it greatly. Anyway, last year, right around this time, I did a show on eggplant. And I talked about some of these stewy summery dishes that highlight what eggplant does best. But I was thinking sort of more in depth about it this week, about the similarities in these stews while I was stewing in my own sweat. Did I mention that? And how they're so alike, how they share these common ingredients, is what I was saying before. And I thought maybe that the subject needed revisiting. I thought maybe we needed to go a little bit more in depth about them. It's not so much about the eggplant and revisiting the eggplant. It's about the technique behind coaxing the magic out of the eggplant, the culinary alchemy, so to speak, turning lead, aka your eggplant, into gold, aka deliciousness. You would never think of eggplant as having the ability to transform into something. It's kind of, they're kind of dopey looking, you know? They're, remember that cartoon character called Shmoo? Anybody remember Shmoo? Or like the Grimace? Remember the Grimace? He was a big eggplant, like a big purple dope, the Grimace. Kind of bulky, kind of dopey and soft, but with a tough skin. Although, I have to say, I mean, eggplants can be beautiful, too, and there are beautiful heirloom varieties out there, but you know those really big ones? They just kind of sit there, like big, dumb things. And I'm partial to Japanese eggplant, those long, skinny ones, but that's a whole other show. But anyway, underneath that deep purple hide is a powerful substance which can turn itself into sort of a muted background against which the other stars in these stews can shine. The tomatoes, the capers, the zucchini, the olives, all of that stuff adds kind of sparkly stars in that deep dark sea of that purple eggplant. Am I getting a little too carried away with this? I'm not sure. Anyway, let's take a little break. I can calm myself down, and then we'll come back and talk about these actual dishes.
You must
get insane.
Get insane.
You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Whole Foods Market, who are proud to support the independent farms and small businesses in our communities. Whole Foods Market is featuring fresh local produce from the tri-state area. For more information, go to wholefoodsmarket.com. Welcome back to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host, and this is episode number 50. Woo! 50th episode. I think that is quite a landmark. So anyway, I'm talking about a subject that I actually had talked about once last summer too, because I guess after 50, you start to run out of ideas. I don't know. No, this is taking it in a different direction. I'm talking about summer stews. Seems like an oxymoron. Why would you stew in the summer? Well, in the summer, you have a lot of vegetables, and stewing them is a really good way to get a lot of your vegetables out of the fridge or out of the garden and into a pot and cook down into something delicious. So I'm sure you saw the movie Ratatouille. Most people saw it, about the rat who coaches the hapless cook who suffers under the tyrannical chef. And there was some storyline about, was it a customer who has this like Proustian memory of Ratatouille? I can't even remember. Anyway, it was a good movie. I mean, the detail was amazing. The story I thought was a little bit weak, but the way they made it was amazing. And but anyway, the Ratatouille that gets made in that movie wasn't really done right. It wasn't really a stew like it's supposed to be. It was more like something called a tian. T-I-A-N, a tian, which is where you just take vegetables and you layer them in a gratin or a casserole and you bake them really, really, really slowly. And I think that's really more like what they were making in the movie of Ratatouille. And you kind of wind up with a similar finished, sort of similar finished, but not really, kind of. But the technique is totally different. So I always feel like while the movie was good, it sort of gave people the wrong idea about what Ratatouille is really supposed to be or how it's supposed to be made. I mean, those vegetables were sliced and then kind of shingled, like fanned out in a copper gratin dish, which was really pretty, but not a stew. So when I was thinking about this today, I looked up Ratatouille in Mastering the Art of French Cooking, Volume 1, Julie Child's book, seminal book, to see, because usually I go to her. She's sort of my source. And in her technique of making ratatouille, she actually does a hybrid of the two things, the baking and the stewing. So she says that you should saute your eggplant and your zucchini first, separately. And I had always heard about that, where there's a method where you cut up all your different vegetables and you saute them all separately. And then you put them all together and then you stew it very slowly. That's sort of like my method. But she says saute your eggplant first, take it out of the pan. Saute your zucchini, take it out of the pan. Let them brown a little bit. Then saute onions, garlic, and bell peppers. Let those brown. And then layer all of that back into the pan and cover it with tomato. And then bake it. And as it bakes, the tomato juices will evaporate and slowly caramelize, and the whole thing will kind of bake down. And you're supposed to keep basting it with its own juices. So you have to keep going until those juices caramelize so you don't get the big steamy mess. But after the sugar in the tomato caramelizes, they turn into basically tomato candy. And that's when the dish really sings. So that's Julia's method. So my method for making ratatouille starts out the same way. I have them dice all the vegetables first. So onions, garlic, eggplant, zucchini, red bell peppers, yellow bell peppers, not green because, as you know, if you listen to the show, I hate green peppers. What else? Eggplant. Did I mention that? Eggplant, of course. And then canned plum tomatoes. So we dice all that up. And then in a big, wide, shallow pan. You have to use a big, wide, shallow pan. You want surface area. You don't want piling up and boiling. You want surface area. You start out with your onions and your garlic, and you cook those, and you get a little color on them. Then we add the eggplant. You let that cook and let that really break down and get some color on that. Then add the peppers. So I do it in layers, and I keep adding to the pan. Add the peppers. Cook them out. Then add the zuke and yellow squash. Cook them out. And cook each addition until it gets crusty golden brown, because that's how you know that the water is gone. Then I add the tomatoes, but I use whole plum tomatoes that I just squish in my hands without any juice and make a layer of that and then start cooking that very gently. Don't stir too much. Just leave it alone. Let it do its thing. And you have to wait a long time because you have to wait for what to happen? Of course, the tomatoes have to give up the juice and the tomato sugar has to turn into tomato candy. But you'll also know when you're ready, because if you keep waiting, you'll actually start to see little pools and rivulets of oil forming on the surface and around the edges of the dish. That's the oil that you started with. It's now floated up to the top and it's showing itself, because once the water is cooked out, the oil separates back out of the dish and it floats on top. And when you see that oil and you see that crust of tomato candy around the edges of the pan, that's when you can stop. You can't rush this, people. You have to take your time. Then you can eat it right out of the pan, hot, or you can eat it cool down at room temp, or you can chill it and eat it cold. But any way you eat it, it's great. And you could also do what I did Sunday, which was put the ratatouille in a big saute pan and make little holes in it, like little wells, and break eggs into that and then cook that with a lid on so the eggs poached in the ratatouille, which was quite delightful on a Sunday morning with some fresh herbs sprinkled on top. So if we left our ratatouille behind and we got in a little boat and we sailed to the far eastern end of the Mediterranean and then we hopped out and we set foot into Turkey, traveled up into Turkey, we would be in the country that I think loves eggplant the most of all the eggplant-loving countries. All the Mediterranean countries love it. India loves it. Southeast Asia loves it. China loves it. But I think the Turks really win in their love and devotion of the eggplant. Their flag should be purple. They love it so much. So we also made this other dish this week that's definitely a cousin of ratatouille. And that is this, doesn't really have a name. It's called this Turkish and, I mean, it's called Turkish eggplant and lentil stew. I'm sure it has some Turkish name, but I don't know what that is. If you know what it is, email me and let me know. So this one is almost like this love child between ratatouille and caponata, which is Sicilian, which I'll get to later. So in this one, you stew the eggplant with cooked lentils and tomatoes and chilies and onions and mint. But then you drizzle on top pomegranate molasses. Now, if you've never had pomegranate molasses, this stuff is so crack-like addictive that just talking about it here, I'm starting to get like a little bit drooly. Very Pavlovian. I just mention it and I start to drool. It's basically just boiled down pomegranate juice, but it gets thick and syrupy and sweet and tart and, oh, it's insane. I'm going to pass out just talking about it. It's kind of like tamarind. That has the same effect on me too, but this is better. It's kind of sharper and syrupier. So this dish basically starts out with eggplant. That's what we're talking about. You're supposed to slice and salt the eggplant and let it drain for this dish. And that's done because people used to do that to pull out some of the juice in the eggplant, which was bitter. But I think most of the modern cultivars are not bitter anymore, and you don't really have to do that. But salting does help minimize the amount of oil that the eggplant will soak up when you saute it. So you can slice it and salt it if you want. Let it drain. And while it's doing that, you cook up some brown lentils, like the big brown, nice flat lentils. Get those kind of soft. And then into a big gratin dish or a big casserole, you just dump your chopped up salted eggplant, your cooked lentils, a bunch of chopped fresh or canned tomatoes, chop up an onion, put that in there, a couple cloves of garlic. And then you want to use a big green chili, like an Anaheim chili or one of those Italian frying peppers. You want a chili that has some heat, but not that's like a super killer heat. You don't want like a jalapeno or a serrano. Use an Anaheim. They're kind of fruity. I guess you could even use a poblano if you couldn't find an Anaheim. Or a banana pepper or like a Cubanelle, one of those. And then a big handful of mint. You want some mint chopped up in there. Douse the whole thing with a good dose of olive oil. Like really douse it. And then drizzle on the pomegranate molasses. At least, I don't know, a quarter cup or so. Give it a good splash. Just mix it all up. Cover it in foil. Put it on top of the stove. Get it really hot on the burner. And then throw it in the oven. And let it bake covered for like an hour and a half. You want to give it time to really steam and mush and get soft and fall apart. But then, when it's at that point, you have to open it up. Take the foil off. And this is where you have to have patience. And believe me, I don't have much patience. But I have patience for this dish. You need to keep cooking it. You leave it in the oven now for at least another hour. Preferably an hour and a half. And you just let it go. You have to just let it happen. Be very zen about it. Try to relax. It's summer. Don't get yourself all worked up. Don't get all sweaty. Just calm down. Leave it in the oven and let it go. And guess what happens? That same miracle will occur. The tomato sugar, the oil separation, the whole thing happens in here. All that magical mystery tour stuff that I talked about with the other dish happens in this one too. And then it gets crusty on top and kind of oily. And you take it out and you let it cool down. And then you dig in and you take a dive into that mysterious depths of that Turkish eggplant magic. It totally rocks the Bosphorus. We need to take a break. We'll be right back and we'll go to Sicily. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Whole Foods Market. Whole Foods Market is proud to support the independent farms and small businesses in our communities. For more information, go to wholefoodsmarket.com. Welcome back to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host, and this is episode number 50 of Why We Cook. It's my 50th anniversary episode. And so I'm revisiting an old friend from the summer. My special guest tonight in the studio with me is the eggplant. Now, I've done an eggplant show before, so don't say, oh, we've heard this before, and shut it off, because this is a different talk. This is a different show. I'm talking about what you can do with eggplant and turn it into the magical mystery dishes of the delicious Mediterranean. So we already covered ratatouille. And then we covered this Turkish eggplant and lentil stew that has no name. I could probably find out a name for it. And I'll post recipes for this also on the Why We Cook Facebook page. So if you want to find us on Facebook, you can go to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. And I'll put up recipes tonight for those. But now we want to take a little hop back across the Mediterranean to Sicily, where they also embrace the eggplant. in so many ways, just like their neighbors, the Turks and the Greeks and all those other swarthy Italian types who love the eggplant so much. And in Turkey, they also, I mean, in Sicily, they also love something called agrodolce. And agrodolce means sweet and sour. And in that Turkish dish, you have the pomegranate molasses, and that's the sweet and sour. And in ratatouille, you have acidity and sweetness from the tomatoes. And you get a sweet and sour there. Although in ratatouille, it's a lot more subtle. In the Turkish dish, and especially in caponata, you get a really intense sweet and sour. And that's what I love about this dish, especially like the sort of true classic Sicilian caponata. Instead of using the pomegranate molasses, the Sicilians make this dish by combining sugar and vinegar. And that's really what the heart of agrodolce is. So in the kind of World Cup of summery stewed vegetable dishes, the Sicilians bring caponata to the playing field. So you start out the same way, onions, garlic, sweated in olive oil. What doesn't start out that way, basically? Maybe a hard-boiled egg. But onions, garlic, sweat, and olive oil. Get some color on them. Then the eggplant, again, cook it out. You got to really cook it out. Basically, with eggplant, you have to force it into submission. Cook out the water. Let it turn brown. And then, like the ratatouille, we add some diced up peppers. Let those cook down. But no zucchini this time in this one. Here is sort of where the Sicilian dish takes its own turn. You throw in some olives and some capers. And you let the olives and the capers cook with a little bit of red wine vinegar and some sugar. And you want that to start to cook down and reduce and get syrupy. And then, of course, tomatoes, like all the other dishes. It all kind of pivots on the tomato. The eggplant is the foundation, and the tomato is like the sail or something, except boats don't have foundations. I mixed up my metaphors there. I'll think about what I'm talking about and get back to you on that one. But you have to have the tomatoes in there, of course. But then in Sicily, there is a special, super secret ingredient that no one can ever guess by the taste of the finished dish what it is. But it adds a deep, dark undercurrent, sort of a shady, sinister, underworld shadow. Kind of like being in Sicily, if you know what I mean. And that ingredient is unsweetened cocoa powder. You actually add dark, unsweetened cocoa powder to the dish. Sort of like in a mole in Mexico where you put unsweetened chocolate in. You use the cocoa powder as a seasoning. And it adds depth and a kind of dark bitterness. And it plays off of the agrodolce, the sweet and sour. And that's the secret ingredient in caponata. So you cook all of that and you let it really kind of cook down and get stewy. Same drill as before, people. Cook the water out of the vegetables. Cook the water out of the tomatoes. Let those sugars do what? Yes, caramelize. Let that oil separate out very slowly. Slowly, slowly. Take your time. Let it happen. You're in Sicily. Where are you going to go? Nothing's going to happen. Let the oil float to the top, and then your caponata is done. Serve it hot, serve it cold. Either way, it's great. Put it on toast, toss it with pasta, eat it right out of the pot with a big spoon like I would do. It's all good. So we're just about out of time tonight in our celebration of the summery, stewy dishes of the Mediterranean, featuring my special guest, the eggplant. So thanks for listening, of course, after all these weeks to Why We Cook. This is our 50th episode. Again, if you want to become a fan on Facebook, I would love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook. Just search for Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. You can also leave comments on the heritageradionetwork.com homepage. And remember that you can podcast any of our shows anytime on iTunes. You can subscribe also. And you can listen to a stream on the website, heritageradionetwork.com, 24 hours a day, too. So you have many ways to listen to our shows, and we have many great shows. So I want to thank Nat and Jack in the control room, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.